I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's January 24th, and we have a lot to talk about. The CDC tells us that 36 million falls are reported each year, resulting in 3 million adults being transported to the emergency room and 32,000 adults dying from their falls. Studies have shown that in any six-month period, more than 50% of the people living with MS fall at least once, and more than 30% fall multiple times. Given these statistics, to say that falling is dangerous would be an understatement. Falling can cause broken bones, brain damage, and, as you just heard, even death. But it doesn't have to be that way. All it takes is a little planning. Joining us to share some tips, tools, and strategies you can use to prevent falls while keeping yourself safe and more independent is Dr. Sarah Migliaris, a board-certified neurologic clinical specialist, professor in the Department of Physical Therapy at Winston-Salem State University, and director of the Neurologic Clinical Residency Program. We often talk about things that can improve your quality of life on this podcast. Trust me when I tell you that breaking an arm or wrist will do absolutely nothing to improve your quality of life. So I hope you'll make learning how to avoid falling and how to fall safely when you do fall two of your resolutions for the new year. This is an important topic, and there's a lot to cover. So I'm devoting this entire podcast episode to the topic of fall prevention. In a moment, we'll meet my guest, Dr. Sarah Migliaris. People living with multiple sclerosis can find themselves dealing with impaired mobility, balance issues, and other symptoms that put them at risk for falls and the potentially life-changing consequences of fall-related injuries. Joining us to share some tips and tools you can use to prevent falls while keeping yourself safe and more independent is Dr. Sarah Migliaris, a board-certified neurologic clinical specialist, professor in the Department of Physical Therapy at Winston-Salem State University, and director of the Neurologic Clinical Residency Program. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Migliaris.
Thank you for the invitation, John. It's a pleasure to be here.
Why are people who are living with MS at an increased risk of falling?
Well, people living with MS have several reasons why they're at an increased risk for falls. And most of those reasons relate back to the faulty covering around the nerves, the myelin that tends to get destroyed through the MS disease process. And because of those faulty nerve coverings making the signals harder to send, it's hard to tell a muscle to move. It's also affects so many other systems just other than strength. It can affect sensation, vision. It can affect the signals coming from the inner ear that help keep us from being dizzy when we move our head. Some people with MS have pain because of the demyelination that occurs with MS. Other people have urinary urgency that puts them at increased risk for falls because they have to hurry to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night. And then sometimes it can also impact our ability to do two things at the same time, or what's called dual tasking. So it's really hard to pay attention to, say, a cognitive task while we're also trying to make sure we don't fall while we're walking up and down stairs. So those cognitive skills that the brain usually is pretty quick and pretty good at picking what's more important, staying on your feet or solving this math problem, sometimes that becomes more difficult with MS. So dual tasking is a problem. And that's just a short list. There's certainly other things like spasticity and fatigue and the inability to maintain energy, you know, throughout the day. So those are probably some of the more common ones, especially the loss of strength and since loss of sensation, especially in the feet.
And how common are falls among people living with MS?
They're very common, John. Unfortunately, they're too common. So research has shown us that people living with MS have the same type of fall risk and incidence of falls that older adults who are over 80 years of age have. So about over 50%, somewhere between 50 and 60% of people living with MS fall at least once every 3 months. And that's increasing. Research used to sort of look at that at every 6 months, but really falls are very common. And if a person has had one fall, then they're more likely to have multiple falls. And unfortunately, people with MS tend to have more falls that result in a serious injury than, say, their age and gender matched peers who don't have MS. So we may fall and not get injured. People with MS fall and do get injured more frequently, and it's a more serious type of injury. So it's a big problem. And, as a healthcare team, we really need to try to decrease the risk and improve mobility so that people with MS have less falls.
I remember that as my wife's MS progressed and she faced balance issues that impaired her mobility, it actually took a couple of falls before she was ready to start thinking about a mobility aid. So I have a couple of questions around this, because it's not an uncommon scenario among people who are living with MS. First, how does someone know when it's time to consider a mobility aid?
Well, I think if you're having to hold on to furniture, walking around your house, and you're feeling unsteady, without doing that, or let's say you're out in the community and you always want to hold on to a friend or your partner's arm, especially going, up and down stairs or on uneven surfaces, uneven ground, or if you're tripping, slipping, and falling, then those are all signs that you may want to speak to a healthcare provider about an assistive device. Now, that doesn't mean you can't go to the drugstore and get a straight cane, off the shelf, but then you really need to talk to someone about how to fit it and which hand do you use it in, what's the appropriate sequence when you're walking. So I think that the need to reach out and find support, whether it's from a person or a piece of furniture or a wall or a rail, that's one of the first signs that you should pay attention to and not ignore and think, okay, well, something's changing. I either need to, see my neurologist again or see a physical therapist, and let's see if a cane or some other sort of assistive device is really the safest option to improve balance and decrease risk for falls.
Well, to that point, as in the case of my wife, some people may resist acknowledging that their mobility issues have gotten worse, or they think that using some sort of mobility device is somehow giving in to MS. What do you say to someone who may be reluctant to consider using an assistive device?
Well, I would say that making a smart decision and picking an assistive device is not giving in to MS, but giving yourself a chance to live healthy with MS. So, that's not always the case. Sometimes people use the wrong device or they don't use it appropriately, and that can actually increase risk for falls, but that's not typically what happens. If they get, fitted for the device and they get some information from a physical therapist or from their primary care provider, then the device will actually make them safer. And it's a win-win. Most assistive devices aren't that expensive, so they're fairly accessible for most people, regardless of their socioeconomic situation. And there are lots of places that even give away assistive devices, senior services and different community centers. So it's not a terrible expense, but it would be a terrible oversight if you didn't get one, and it could keep you from falling, because a $20 cane certainly is not a bad choice. And you can get them that look pretty decorative. They don't all have to be unattractive. You can always, as a friend of mine says, booger it up, make it look real pretty, and paint it or, make it your cane. That's much cheaper than going to the emergency room with a fractured hip or a fractured ankle. So it's it's a smart thing. You should tell yourself, I am smart because I'm willing, you know, to give, put myself in the best position to stay physically active and healthy.
I think I heard you say a moment ago that someone may find they're using the wrong device. So what kinds of assistive devices are available to improve someone's mobility and safety? And how does someone determine which assistive device is best for them?
There is a wide variety of devices, starting with a straight cane. That's probably the least supportive, but probably the most common. You know, the, some of those fold up, you put them in your purse or your backpack. There are types of canes that have a wider base and 4 feet that provide a little more stability. Then the next assistive device, probably on that ability to support a person, might be a forearm crutch, and then potentially a walker. And there are walkers that are standard walkers that you have to pick up every time you advance your feet, or walkers that roll. So that's a little less energy demanding. So that's not as bad on fatigue, but it's also not quite as stable as a standard walker. And then there's, you can use bilateral forearm crutches. You can use trekking poles. And sometimes that's a nice option for somebody who doesn't want to, you know, use a typical medical device looking cane. You know, use a trekking pole, or use two trekking poles, or, you know, hiking sticks. And those are a little more stylish. They're very lightweight. And again, they probably fold up. But if that's not enough, or say somebody has progressed from using a rolling walker and really is looking at wheeled types of mobility aids, and of course, there's your standard walker. You can have power devices, you know, a power wheelchair or a scooter, but those would take a little extra, few extra visits to a medical expert who knows how, what are the options on those types of devices, how to fit them safely, and then, you know, how to make them as lightweight and as energy efficient as possible, so that using a manual chair doesn't sap all your energy out, you know, after, you know, an hour in the morning, you can't make it through your day. So there's a huge gamut, a large range of devices, and I would seek the expertise of a physical therapist and or occupational therapist when it comes to wheeled mobility, and a physical therapist, especially when it comes to walking aids, because they're experts in movement.
I heard you start to answer my next question at the very beginning of our conversation. I want to circle back to it, because I think when a lot of people consider falling or trying to avoid a fall, they think about walking, they think about mobility issues. And while walking difficulties can be one of the most common risk factors for falling, it's not the only risk factor. Can you tell us about other MS symptoms that can be risk factors as well, and maybe share some strategies for reducing the risk of falling?
Yeah. So besides the changes in your physical or physiologic systems that happen with MS, sometimes people who are tripping and slipping frequently start to develop a fear of falling or lack of confidence in themselves and their ability to, say, get on an escalator at the mall, or their ability to walk on an icy sidewalk or sweep the front porch. So activities that would normally happen in their everyday life are suddenly, you know, dangerous. So sometimes there's some psychological or behavioral changes that happen, typically as a result of having a fall history, that can be changed, right? Those can be altered. And so, you know, having a healthy fear of falling on an icy sidewalk, you don't want to change, right? You want to make sure you maintain that behavior. But taking risks, undue risks, you know, that you really shouldn't be taking because your balance isn't good enough to go up and down the ladder, or your balance isn't really good enough to, you know, take a hike on a very narrow trail. So I think there are some psychological risk factors that can impact someone's risk for falls, such as fear of falling and then lack of confidence in your ability to get through the day because you kind of second guess your balance and your mobility. And so the way you address those is acknowledging them first. Okay, you know, I have a different approach to going up and down a ladder than I used to. So maybe that's a wise thing to stop and pause and ask, is that something I should do? Or should I have someone help me? Or maybe I only can go up two or three steps and not a full 17, you know, rung ladder. So sometimes you want to alter your relationship with more risky movement things that you just sort of took for granted, and maybe get the advice of a physical therapist. Maybe they can help you figure out and revise or change the way you do a certain activity to make it safer. Maybe you wear different shoes. Maybe you, you know, don't chop down the trees in your yard anymore, or you only chop down the small ones. So I think changing and addressing those psychological types of risk factors are important, as well as things like medication and, you know, your footwear and your home safety. And so there's other types of risk factors other than just what's happening from a physiologic standpoint in your body because of MS. And some you can alter and some you can't. So the type of MS you have that can lead to a higher risk for falls. Having progressive MS is a risk factor for having more falls. The age, your gender, those things you can't change, but are risk factors for falls. But there's lots of things you can change. So that's a positive message that I would hope that people take to heart and know, well, I can change my risk for falls and, you know, and address the fear I might be having or address the lack of confidence I might be having in my mobility skills.
You mentioned medication a moment ago, and it got me wondering first whether there are any medications that can possibly help people in terms of avoiding falls. And the flip side of the question, are there medications that someone may be taking to manage an MS symptom that actually increase their risk of falling?
Great question, John. So I would say if you have urinary urgency, that if you haven't talked to your neurologist about medicines that can help with that, that would be something I would start with, right? Because most falls for people with MS happen in the home. It's very common that they happen at night where it's dark and you can't rely on your vision. And if you've lost sensation in your feet and you can't see because it's dark, then you're really relying a lot on your inner ear. And that kind of gets a little lazy the less active we are. So I think, you know, addressing medicines that can help with urinary urgency, that's a good medicine that you'd want to take. Also, people sometimes with MS are on medicine to help with pain. And that's very helpful. It can help them get through the day. But if the pain medicine's making them drowsy or very sleepy, you know, throughout the day, that can increase risk for falls. So they need to talk to their neurologist about either adjusting the dose or finding a different pain med that's effective in reducing pain, but doesn't have the side effect of drowsiness that they may be experiencing. Another medicine that can be good and bad, have pros and cons, might be an anti-dizziness medicine like meclizine, or also called Antivert. So while someone may have dizzy symptoms and that's increasing their risk for falls, they frequently get prescribed the Antivert, and then that helps them feel less dizzy when they're moving, but it also dampens the signals coming from their inner ear, so their brain has less information to work with, so it really increases their risk for falls. So while it's a good thing short term, it's not really a great medicine to be on long term. So again, a conversation with their neurologist would be a good way to start if they're on a long term on medicine for dizziness, because they would hopefully want to get off that. Or maybe they need a referral to a vestibular rehab specialist who can further address their dizzy symptoms if they happen to be from the inner ear and not necessarily from the brain. It kind of depends on what's causing the dizziness. And then the most common types of medicine that increase risk for falls are psychoactive medicine, things that address mood, anxiety, or sleep. So while they help us feel better and psychologically, you know, manage life and get through our day, they can also increase risk for falls because they make us sort of foggy and a little bit sleepy. So if the person with MS is on one of those types of medicines, again, mood, sleep, anxiety, on a medicine to help with that, I would have a discussion with the neurologist or their physician, whoever their physician is, who's prescribed it, and talk about, okay, can I, you know, can we adjust the dose? You know, I'm feeling foggy. You know, I'm feeling less depressed, but my brain is foggy, and that's going to increase their risk for falls. So I would certainly address those medicines. And then one more that comes to mind would be spasticity medicine. So something like baclofen or lauricol, a medicine that helps decrease muscle spasms and muscle tone. But if it's not the exact right dose, it could actually, again, make them sleepy or drowsy and maybe make the muscle so sort of relaxed that their leg might not be as stable. So there's a good balance between too much or too little of a spasticity medicine. And again, that's another conversation they should have with whoever prescribed the medicine. And then they may have multiple doctors. Let's hope that a neurologist, one person who specializes in MS, is managing all the medicines.
Since people with MS fall most frequently when they're at home, what can they do to minimize the risk of falling in their home?
A home safety check would be a great start. And there's a wonderful checklist on the National MS Society webpage related to the free from falls information. And so they can download that checklist and look at things like stairs. If they have stairs in their home, are they safe? You know, are they easy to see from a visual standpoint? Do they need reflective sort of strips or tape applied to them so it's easier to tell, hey, I'm walking from one transition, you know, transitioning from, say, a level surface to steps? If there are stairs or steps, is there a rail? And do you need a rail on both sides? You know, is their mobility impaired enough that they need two rails or just a rail on one side? That would be something else that I would look at. And then bathroom safety is very important. A lot of falls happen in the bedroom and the bathroom, especially at night. So night lights, so that's something that's very sort of common knowledge, but we don't always pay attention to it. But night lights at night, so that when you do walk into the bathroom in the middle of the night, that you know you can see. And then do you need grab bars, say getting up and down from the toilet or in and out of the shower? Are there some modifications you can make to the bathroom so that they're not having to step over the side of a bathtub and you could just walk right into a shower? Maybe adding a seat in the shower. One sort of very common feeling of dizziness happens when people stand in the shower, close their eyes to wash their hair, and then they're on a slippery surface, their eyes are closed, and their head's tilted back. So that's a very common place for people to have some dizzy symptoms. And a rail there would be very helpful. They could just hold on to the grab bar and, you know, feel a little more stable, or sit on a seat in the bathroom. So throw rugs would be something else. I would suggest they pick up any throw rugs, remove any cords across doorways, and do, if you need to do repairs, you know, make sure that the floors are level and that, you know, again, the if there's railings or stairs that aren't stable or that need, you know, an extra tightening of a wrench, have some handyman come in or handywoman come and make the appropriate repairs at the home so that, you know, grab bars and stair rails are safe and secure. And I think that's probably the kitchen, you know, again, pick up the throw rugs, maybe move things from a higher shelf to a lower shelf or to the main counter so that people aren't wanting to reach or have to climb up on a, you know, a footstool. That would be nice. So just readjusting and moving different things in the kitchen so that they're easier to get to can help decrease fall risks in the home. But there's a full list that you'd want a person with MS would want to look at and sort of check off, and then, you know, get appropriate referrals. If you'd want to show that to your physician, show that to a PT, a physical therapist, or an occupational therapist for further ideas. Sometimes they can actually go in the home, or you could take a video of your home and share that with your therapist, and then they can help identify what needs to be changed. But that's really important to make their home safe, since most falls happen in the home with people with MS.
Well, while we're talking about minimizing the risk of falls, Public places are filled with potential hazards like uneven pavement, ice or snow, loose gravel, just to name a few. How can someone increase their personal safety while they're out in the community?
That's another great question. So I think being aware would be the first step. If you know where you're headed, trying to kind of take an estimation of the landscape, so to speak, and, you know, look and see, are there stairs available with the rail? Let me use those stairs. Maybe you have to walk a little farther to get to them, but in the end, that might be safer. Before you leave the house, first of all, do you have your assistive device? Maybe you don't use it in the home, but, you know, you might use it in the community. So is there one in the car? You know, do you need a different assistive device out in the community that's a little more stable? Make sure that's in your car. And then think about the shoes you're wearing. Don't go out in your slippers or your sandals. Make sure you're in shoes that have a full back and that are secured and have rubber soles that aren't worn. So, you know, some of it is think about, you know, how to prepare yourself before you leave the home. Make sure that you're, you know, you're dressed appropriately for whatever the weather is, since a lot of folks with MS can have some heat sensitivity. You want to make sure that you've got the right clothing on. But sometimes people can change how they walk and, you know, in the community if they know it's unlevel, if they know that they're walking across grass or the ground or gravel. They might want someone to walk with them. They might widen their base of support a little bit, sort of make their feet a little bit wider. So, and walk with shorter steps or a little bit slower just to be on the cautious side. And that might make them feel like a, you know, like a grandma or grandpa, but if it keeps them from falling, then that's not a bad thing. You know, if you know you're going into a community with that has a lot of people, there's, you know, a lot of distractions as far as, you know, visual distractions and noise distractions, maybe make sure you go with someone, you know, that you're not doing that by yourself. And just know that in one study recently, people with MS reported the main reasons they fall is because they trip, they slip, or they got distracted. So if you're out in the community and there's more distractions, whether that's visually or, you know, sensory, or there's just more people, or, you know, you're in an unfamiliar place, then slow down, maybe take someone with you, and then maybe widen your base of support a little bit and make sure you've got your assisted device if you use one with you. So, you know, be prepared.
Despite the very best of intentions, it's probably unrealistic to think that anyone can completely eliminate the risk of falling. So when a person feels themselves falling, are there any, I guess we'll call them, best practices for landing? You know, are there do's and don'ts for how to fall while minimizing your chance of serious injury?
Oh, yeah. There's some real easy ones. I mean, easy for us to say, hard to do when you're actually falling. But I would say if you're using an assisted device and you know you're falling and there's, you know, there's no wall or anything for you to reach out and grab to slow down your fall, my first advice would be to throw the assistive device, get it out of the way. A lot of times, especially if people have walkers, if they hold on to the assistive device for dear life as they're falling and then they get tangled up in it, they're more likely to break an arm, you know, or get hurt because of the assistive device. So if you can, and you can practice this with a physical therapist, you know, on a padded surface, they would pretend that you fall. And the first thing you would want to do is throw your assistive device. So get it out of the way, not so far that you can't go get it, but throw the assistive device and then protect your head. If you need to put your hands over your head or turn sideways and fall on your side, that is so much better than reaching out and falling on outreached arms, like straight arms, you know, trying to catch yourself. Either falling backwards to the side or to the front with the straight arm, because that's a fractured arm almost every time, especially for people who've been on a lot of steroid treatment and have osteoporosis. It's the incidence of osteoporosis in MS it's pretty high, and mostly because of medicine, a little bit higher in females. But throw your assistive device. Don't try to catch yourself on an outstretched arm. And then once you've, and try to protect your head. If you can't protect your head, that's great. Once you've fallen, you know, maybe take a deep breath and do a safety check. So you're going to want to palpate and feel your arms and legs and your head, especially to make sure that you're not bleeding, that you haven't fractured something. There's not a bone sticking out, and do a safety check before you try to get up. So, you know, if there's blood somewhere, if you know you hit your head really hard or you think you fractured something, and usually you can tell that by pain, by immediate swelling and redness, and you know, in a particular, especially a wrist or an ankle or a hip, then wait, let someone else call 911 and have someone else help you get up. But if you can, you know, try not to, you know, if you're, especially if you're falling quickly and backwards, throw your arm back behind you with the straight arm. It's better to tuck and roll. So think about tucking and rolling.
Well, Dr. Sarah Migliori, thank you for all you do to improve the lives of people living with MS. And thanks for talking with me today.
Thank you, John. It was a pleasure.
That's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society. And you can share this episode of the podcast by letting your friends or family members know that all they have to do is point their web browser at realtalkms.com/282. You'll find that link in today's show notes, so you can easily copy and paste it right into an email or a text. And if you have a minute, I hope you'll visit the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store and download the free Real Talk MS app for your iOS or Android smartphone or tablet. It's the best way for us to stay connected. The app will automatically download the latest episode of Real Talk MS. You'll be able to access any of our past episodes. You'll be able to save your favorite episodes. And it's a great way for me to share bonus content with you. The app is free, so I hope you'll download it today. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and make healthy choices.